right, folks, we are back on the flagstick.com T-Talk podcast. And this episode is sponsored by Ping Golf and the all-new Ping G425 lineup. Learn more at ca.ping.com. Stefan Tiedorf here with my co-host, as per usual, and always, Scott McLeod. How are you?
I'm probably doing better than you were yesterday. How's that? I know we're recording a little later today, or a little later this week by a day, because you might have been disabled, let's say that.
Cinco de Mayo came a few days early. The day after. The recovery of Cinco de Mayo came a few days early. So we are recording this on Cinco de Mayo. It is a nice early in the afternoon. So in honor of that, I have a nice citrus lime beverage going here. Made a full recovery. I'm going to give a birdie this week to Copectate, who is my new sponsor. My sponsor.
Nice.
I didn't think we were going to talk about that. Good start.
Well, you know, hey, we got to be real around this podcast, right? I mean, there's no point in getting around it, right? Life happens. It happens.
It happens, Scott. Happens.
You got it.
Shout out to our, you know, audio engineer producer, Brendan Kennedy, who is now scrambling to finish this all in, you know, a few hours on Wednesday nights. We can get it on Thursday. This guy, he's always working hard. He had a good laugh about last week's episode when we're talking about his job, and he's like, hopefully his boss doesn't listen to this podcast.
Oh no. we're hoping to kick him out at some point because we want him to be back on tour. Yeah. Because we want live music to be back, and he can get back to his job. That's
do you
sure.
know Scott, you know what the best part about being on tour is as a musician?
Having some time off during the day to play golf.
No, but just telling people you're on tour. That's like
the true. Cool, you're right.
Yeah, the coolest exactly. thing. And you know that he misses that. He misses telling people, I'm on tour. Can't make it to Wings tonight. Can't play NHL with the boys tonight. I'm on tour.
I'm guessing you got that excuse from him before, or you've given that excuse before, yeah. or at least you tried to give that excuse before, right?
Definitely. Like, I'm on tour. I was playing in probably Belleville, and like two nights earlier, it was probably in Brockville. But yeah, I probably had laminates built up and everything for my days playing in a band. But
nice.
Yeah, great start to the pod. Why don't we get into the week that was every week? You know, we give our birdies, our pars, our bogeys. Honorable mention. Where do you want to start, Scott? Do you want to start positive and go backwards? You want to start negative and finish on a positive? What are you thinking this week?
You know what? Just dive in, jump in the middle. What's the thing that stands out to you the most from the week?
I'm going to go with the thing that I think I thought about the most after is a bogey, and I'm going to go with Hannah Green's finish in Singapore. And obviously it stands out to me knowing, you know, Nate on the bag out there. And I'm sure lots happened. I wasn't actually able to watch much of this tournament. I watched early on in the week. And just, it was so hot there.
Oh yeah.
I was talking to Dez, 100 degrees every single day. And I'm going to just throw out my honorable mention right now too of it. You know what? It's a double bogey. It's going to the PGA Tour dress code, and it has to do with that. So I'm going to get to that in a second.
All right. But
yeah, just a bogey finish. A par brings her in. She wins her third time out on tour and just couldn't get it done. It sucked to see. I think everyone just thought it was in the bag at that point. It's not like she hasn't been there before.
No.
So you were probably watching a little bit more. What did you see in those final two holes?
Yeah, I mean, it was middle of the night, but you know what? The cool part was talking to Nate earlier in the week. You know, he was obviously commenting on how well Hannah was playing, and he basically said, you know, she's hitting it better than she did when she went twice in 2019. But I don't know. It's almost like she lost her focus a little bit on that last couple of greens. I didn't see much of her explanation or anything afterwards. But, you know, given what the week was like and how much energy it sapped out of them, very difficult week for the tour there. And we'll get into that when I talk about my aspects of my bogeys and stuff. But, you know, beyond the heat, there was a lot of other things that were going on, and it just looked like she just ran out of gas, you know. Easily, and unfortunately, I mean, it's, you know, a tournament where, like you said, 100 degrees out, pretty easy to run out of gas, pretty easy to lose your focus. And sometimes, you know, especially when you get close, especially to any type of activity. I mean, any type of sport that you play, it's really easy to get your hands off the wheel and realize that, you know, you got to keep going right to the end. And I think she just kind of let up maybe a little bit and didn't stay quite as focused and just lost it. So, but that could be physically, that could be not mentally, that could be just as a result of, you know, what was going on as far as the heat, temperature, whatever. I don't think it's, you know, a skill issue, that's for sure.
Oh, of course.
But it just happened that, you know, her three putts that she had came on the last two holes.
Yeah, it's unfortunate too that, you know, it's a major difference in paycheck. Ooh. Too. A T3,
yeah,
you know, you're picking up 88,000 versus a couple hundred K, which is still, you know, they're going all the way to Singapore for one tournament and that's the purse. I hate it.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll talk about that with Ryan a little bit more too.
Yeah.
He was on the podcast, just purses and obviously some news about the Korn Ferry Tour, mm-hmm. their purse going up in a couple of years, but go ahead.
No, that's where I went with my bogey as well. I mean, it was over there and looking at that women, it's a women's world championship event, HSBC. This is run by IMG, you know, one of the largest companies in the world as far as representatives in sports and running events and so forth. But, you know, limited field, 69 players that were there. 240 is the first prize for it. I mean, 240 and you know, you mentioned it, obviously got to get there because of the quarantine situation and everything that was going on there. The caddies were required to stay at the one hotel, which ended up being, you know, double what they would normally pay.
Which is a joke because you're forcing them to stay there and then you're setting the price.
Yeah, you're setting the price. And also they had to stay in a room by themselves. So, you know, in most cases, the caddies are sharing rooms and things like that. A lot of other restrictions. And I get it, you know, from a health perspective or whatever, as far as being, you know, quarantine in their rooms. The players could make appointments to go to the gym, but the caddies couldn't. They had to get room service. There was issues with the, you know, the food coming up. Being late, cold, whatever, they would have to pay extra money for different things. There was just a lot of things that happened there. And really when it came down to it and talking to, you know, a number of players and caddies and whatever, I mean, basically, unless you were winning, it was going to be a tough week. And I mean, that would solve it. But I mean, if you look all the way down to, you know, the last place and we'll put it in context of a WGC event where, you know, last place, some of these players are getting, you know, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. I mean, the last place, this is an IMG run Asia's major is one of the slogans they call it. $3,350. They
that's
win.
That's not covering close to your cost. It's clearly double for. You're assuming your caddy. You probably have to double their weekly rate
right.
for the week.
Yep.
Right. I'm sure you're giving them 8%, which is $30 or whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, and that's the hotel. It. Right. Like it's yeah. it's not that's bad.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate.
And what's a flight to Singapore in COVID times? Like,
yeah,
1,500 bucks?
19-hour flight, everything that goes with it. You know, some of those players were going on to, you know, Thailand this week. Other ones are flying right back. A bunch of them were going to San Francisco and playing practice rounds for the U.S. Open this week. You know, I get it. That's the risk that you take, but it certainly would be a lot better for an event that's called the HSBC Women's World Championship to see a purse that's commensurate with what's actually happening there. And, you know, relative to what the expense is and everything that's going to go on. So yeah, that's my bogey.
I like it. Let's head to birdies. Ours are kind of the same. I'm giving my birdie for the week, the Champions Tour final round. Obviously Mike Weir picks up a win, which is his first win since 1994
or 2007. Yeah,
2007. Exactly.
But it felt like it. I know what
it felt like a long time. It was just an exciting final round. Obviously the tournament was 2 days and I'm sure people are gonna be like, oh, you know, let him win a 3-day one, but hey, a win's a win. Everyone was sure. in there, but it was exciting right until the end. And Mike was dialed in right.
I loved your tweet.
Yeah. It's not, I did not expect, you know, a Sunday to think I needed John Daly battling Mike Weir out on the Champions Tour. Like I did, but I was diving into some stats from Mike Weir, and something odd that I'm seeing here is as the year's gone on, his distance has continued to go down and down, but his accuracy continues to go up and up. And a few months ago, he was saying, I couldn't hit a green, I couldn't hit a fairway, I couldn't hit anything. And I wonder if he's just accepted, hey, I don't need to be chasing anything anymore out there. I can just find some fairways because the course isn't that long. And now I can have success where I've always had success, which is my short game. And, you know, the guy was dialed in, though. His irons on that back nine, that eagle where he hit it to like well, it couldn't have been more than 3 feet. I thought he had, I thought it was for birdie, like, because it was so high. I was like, well, he must have had a wedge, and I wasn't really paying attention. Kid was, you know, making
seven iron from 185.
Yeah, right. Like, oh, launching. But I just thought it was exciting right to the end. Unfortunate for John Daly to come up short like that, literally come up short on the 18th hole, which I didn't expect. You know, and it's just funny seeing him hop back in the golf cart like that whole it's just a different type of tournament to watch, and you don't see it that often right to the end. And yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. You know, Golf Channel did well, saw a lot of shots, and they really highlighted the storylines people wanted to hear, which was Mike Weir or John Daly. And they weren't there were other guys in the mix right until the end, but those were the two people that everyone was really watching.
Yeah, and I mean, there was a lot. There's a lot of threads to pull out of that conversation. Remember, I mean, first off, I'll address as far as Weir. You know, he was talking mostly about not hitting fairways and stuff more 2 years ago, more than just this year. This year, you know, he has been playing well. I would say that the earlier events were played on drier golf courses in Tucson and so forth. So I'd say his driving distance has gone down relative to that more than anything. He's definitely been playing well consistently, and I'll get to his press conference that he had afterwards in a minute. The other side is, you know, there's a lot of people cheering for Daly, given that you know, he's still a two-time major winner, looks like Santa Claus out there wearing those loudmouth pants too or whatever, but you know, he's gone through bladder cancer, still dealing with bladder cancer, so that's, you know, that's an element that comes into play there too. But you know, still two players with cool stories, and I guess that's the essence of the Champions Tour. You know, we've certainly gotten away from the Cinderella stories on the Champions Tour because they just don't want those players. We don't see the, you know, the farmers and stuff that are making their way in there. But these are guys that have won tournaments over the years on their PGA Tour, so the fans have some tie with these players. But you're right, they did a good job with telling the stories and having them in there. And you know, I don't think anybody in Canada was certainly, you know, cheering for Daly more than Weir. There's probably some. But, you know, knowing that Mike had been so close, especially in Tucson early in the year when, you know, he had that tournament in his grasp. He was up by two with three to go. And you know, he let that slip. And he made mention of that Sunday night when he eventually got to his press conference. I can talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, if you want. Before you do, I got a question for you. What do you think is more accurate? The PGA Tour's website listing John Daly's weight at 215 pounds or Mike Weir's height at 5'9"?
What did they have for Daly?
215.
I think they're closer on Mike's height by far.
Well, obviously, like, I think, yeah, 1 or 2 inches doesn't go as far. Different.
But it's 30 or 40 pounds.
Yeah, I got to go with neither of these are accurate. Or like that. Well, like, what's Mike realistic? 5'7"?
Yeah, probably around that. I mean, it's no different than, hey, you know, some of the NHL stats and stuff like that. I mean, I remember talking to one guy I knew who played, you know, I think he got 11 games in the show or whatever. And, you know, he was listed, I think, at like 6'1", and he's 5'10" tops or whatever. And he's like, oh, yeah, you know, pucks under my heels and whatever. Anyways, whatever the case may be, it's just the way it is. But that's a funny thing to point out. You know what was neat to see with Weir was on Sunday night. Now,
he is your birdie for the week. You haven't said that.
He is. Yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah. He is my birdie for the week. Him getting back to the winner's circle. And, you know, it's 236 starts that he's had before he had a win again, you know, from that victory back in 2007. And, you know, it was 132 cuts in there. And, you know, for me, there's a lot of different things that sort of play into that. I mean, it's watching him leave the golf course with an injury in 2010. I mentioned on the podcast before, you know, watching him, you know, physically go, you know, I can't play any more holes. And I was sitting with the rules official and watching him leave the golf course at St. George's, not at the Pro-Am, not sure if he could continue and go on. And then, you know, and then he struggled. I mean, he struggled and struggled and struggled. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, went from being number three in the world in 2003 to all of a sudden he dropped below 2000 in the world rankings. I mean, he was just in oblivion. I mean, if you look up the names of the people that are in the 2000s in world rankings, Jerry D is in there for playing, you know, just because he played a McKenzie Tour event. That's how far down Mike Weir had dropped, right? So if you go and dig through those stats, you'll have a good laugh when you look through those. You know, but again, it was like 5 years after that, watching him at Riviera in the dark, you know, warming up and grinding. And it was literally dark. They had lights up. And this was a guy who got a sponsor's exemption playing that event. And he was still grinding away and grinding it away. And, you know, he said it very well and talked a lot about it on Sunday night. He did a press conference just for the Canadian media after the regular festivities were concerned. And there was about, you know, 12 or 15 of us. And it was the most relaxed that I've ever seen him in a long while. He was definitely a little bit more aloof during his career. He was very intense. He was very hard on himself. And he certainly mentioned that. And he just talked about gratitude. That was the first thing that he talked about. Just the people around him and learning to be, you know, easier on himself and being a different Mike Weir. And it was cool to hear. And he was just in a t-shirt with a glass of red wine, obviously had to catch a flight, but he still stayed as long as he could just to chat. And he was definitely introspective and it was cool to see just the fact that he could finally get that reward. And he talked about it. And I wrote about it in a story, if anybody wants to look on flagstick.com, but he talked about the fact that he just wanted to play better golf. Didn't matter what it was, whether that was going to be back winning on tour or playing with his buddies. He said, I just love the game so much. I wanted to play better golf. I just didn't want to walk away from golf like that. And that's when there was a lot of honesty and that was neat to see. And sometimes you don't see that from athletes, and you certainly didn't see that from him a lot during the major part of his career when, you know, he got a little tighter, a little quieter, wouldn't talk quite as much or whatever. Just great to see, really, overall.
Do you think the Champions Tour events should have some official world golf ranking?
Yeah, I do. I mean, they could, you know, you have to think about it. Everything is going to be weighted, right? Much like they are for McKenzie Tour or whatever. But if you look at the strength of the field, they can certainly calculate the strength of the field based on, you know, who's in there. Mm-hmm. And that is the unfortunate part that, you know, he's not going to go up in the world rankings. I mean, his last world ranking points he got were from the Masters, right? I believe so.
Yeah. Masters, Sony Open before that, and then a bunch of Korn Ferry Tour events.
Yeah, exactly. So I think so. And I mean, that's up to the, you know, the committee for that to decide that. But certainly, yeah, I think it should have some value for sure.
I agree. Just saw that and thought,
No, good point.
I never really thought about it before. Why don't we hit our pars for the week? For me, it was that Patrick Reed Golf Digest article. It brought nothing to me either way.
Was there anything new in it?
It was exactly what I thought it would be. It was a bunch of softball questions. Three pitch to your own team softball. I know they worded them in the article one way, and they, you know, there's ways, you're a journalist. I apparently am. Got checked for it. You know, there's ways you can put a, you know, a forward at the start. You know, it's been edited for blah, 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 blah. That means you can also edit your own questions that you claim you asked in that scenario. And I didn't like it. If you're going to address it, let's address it. Like, they bring up the fact in it that, I guess if I'm saying I didn't like it, it's a bogey. I'm not saying I don't like it. It was just nothing for me.
Sure.
But they bring up the fact that, you know, after he won the Masters, the big story that came out was, you know, his relationship with his family. And he answers the question in just talking about his, you know, his immediate family of his wife and his kids and yada, yada, yada. Maybe that's cool. You're, you know, focused on the positives. But if you're asking the question and the person didn't answer the question, right?
Well, ask it again,
right? Like, let's actually address your family. Why don't we get it on the record if you want to, if the headline is, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but like, you know, the Patrick Reed you see isn't who he is. Well, then let's actually address things that everybody believes he is. So I didn't learn anything new other than, you know, he claims to be a family man. And he really likes to cook red meat, right? And like, you know, next time I make a prime rib, I might throw in the smoker and might give him a shout out. And I was chirping Brad Lawrence today because Brad was praising this article online on Instagram, and Patrick Reed liked it. And I said to Brad, if Patrick Reed ever likes anything I do, I'm going to question if I did something wrong. And you know, so I don't know. It was just a par. I wanted more.
I get it. You didn't get much out of it. And I think you're right.
You didn't read it.
No, I didn't read it. But overall, if you're talking about exactly what you're saying and the fact that, you know, if you're going to do that article and you're going to say, all right, I'm going to lay it out on the line here and get it over with so that people are just don't spend all their time speculating. Not that they're not going to criticize it one way or the other, because whatever he puts out there, people are just going to go, oh, that's not true or whatever. But
that's fair.
But if he knows that that's the honest truth and he's put it out there and he really put it out there, then, you know, that's going to be clear from his conscience as well. But you're right. If he had the opportunity to do that, which obviously Golf Digest gave him that opportunity to do that, then, you know what? He could probably gain a lot of, I won't say trust, but he'll gain a lot of more respect from people if he's willing to be honest about that. And we've seen it with other players. And Willie was a great example last week. He was honest. Like, I mean, he was not going to shy away from any question we asked him. He was just going to tell us the truth. And when somebody does that, you can respect it, whether it's gritty or you don't like what they did or whatever, but at least they told, you know, what the truth is and you could tell it was the truth. And so if you're saying it just looks like they're putting a, you know, lipstick on something and it really wasn't, well, then you're right. It is a par because you didn't gain anything and it didn't solve anything.
No, you're right. Shout out to Willie. We gave him a tee talk bump for 18 holes.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the other 18 didn't go the same way. So we're going to need to bring him on 3 more times. I think that's what's going to need to happen.
I think so. He had he was great putting in the first round, which obviously was what he talked about on the pod. And that was what he struggled with. But unfortunately, the magic elixir that we laid on him only lasted for 18 holes. So hopefully he turns it around.
Yeah, we'll have to bring him and Mark on for a whole episode one time, start to finish and get their thoughts. I think that would be... We might get canceled. I think they might take over. Like, I think Jeff might fire both of us and the Tee Talk podcast. Sure. We brought by Will and Mark at that
Mark.
Point. Yeah. So, yeah. What's your par for the week?
My par for the week is just, you know, sort of an age old thing. I haven't really talked about it too much or whatever, but, you know, I just saw it erupt again. And, you know, it was a former guest of ours and then someone else, and they were yapping about it back and forth. And they basically, you know, again, I shouldn't really
give some details. It was on Twitter. It's public information.
Yeah, it's on Twitter. It was Jeff Shackelford and Samantha Marks going back and forth over odds and ends or whatever their differences are. I don't really care. The only problem is that it gets put into this narrative that it's old media versus new media, you know, just because someone's of a certain age and someone's of another age and someone at a different age is handling stuff in a different way than an older person would. Well, really, when it comes down to it, the reason why this is a par for me, and it's not that I'm ticked off at this, just people have to understand that there's always going to be differences in opinions. And it doesn't matter what the age category is. Guaranteed, I have other 51-year-old journalists that don't think the same the way that I do. And I guarantee you that there's other 29-year-old journalists that don't think how the other 29 journalists think. So
sure, there's 50-year-olds that prefer foreplay and 29-year-olds that prefer whatever. Us.
Right? Yeah, exactly. So the thing is, in the end, every angle's got something to give back to the game. Trying to, you know, make it into a false narrative just becomes like the hoodie debate, right? It's like there wasn't a debate. You know, who was really worried about it? It was just something to talk about. So in the end, and here we are talking about it, right? Just drop it. I mean, if you want to have an argument because you have a difference of an opinion for somebody, don't paint it. It's because they're old media or versus new media. That really doesn't define it. That's not really getting to the argument. Your argument has something else, has to do with something else. That's just, you know, a frame that you're putting around it. It's not necessary.
I also can't wait for Brendan to cold open this episode with me saying, I'm sure 51-year-olds prefer foreplay.
Oh God. You just thought about that now, isn't it?
As it came back, I was...
Yeah, you know what? Here's the thing. As long as everybody does their best job possible, provides their perspective, you know, tells the truth and doesn't, you know, use crap ways to push themselves forward. And you know, there's different methods to push yourself forward as far as to sell your stories and to, you know, create your narratives and things like that. But every single thing has value to it and has value to the audience. And it's up to the audience to decide what they like and they prefer. You know, that's really what it comes down to it.
Yeah. At the end of the day, you're worth what somebody will, pay their time for
yeah,
it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
They're not necessarily paying. So, like, if somebody's if, you know, Fourplays get millions of views on their videos every single week, well, then they're worth their millions of views, right? And that's their worth. And if that's, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Then if you don't think that's the right way, then you do it your way and go get millions of views. Pretty simple.
Or just move on, keep scrolling.
Or don't watch.
Keep scrolling.
Don't listen. I don't care.
There are mute buttons. There are unfollow buttons. There are block buttons. There's lots of ways to deal with stuff. If something aggravates you so much and you have to go back and bitch about it all the time, just mute it, whatever, move on and do your thing.
Let's hit our honorable mentions. I'm quite impressed. We made it through, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes of this podcast without even mentioning the PGA Tour first. That just shows how good of a golf week it was for storylines outside of the PGA Tour. For me, I almost gave the Valspar a bogey in general. I thought it was just boring. I'm sorry to Sam Burns and Keegan Bradley. They bring nothing to me to bring me to a TV and watch on Sunday.
Keegan I'll pass on for sure. The side eye with his putts and his routine and getting warned about their play is
he's slow. There was a time I was watching a little bit. I did not watch much after I think the 10th hole, and I only watched on Sunday. I didn't tune in at all. I checked a couple scores for some buddies, but it was like they're going back forth of who should go first, him and Sam.
I saw that.
And Keegan goes, I got 103 adjusted.
Adjusted.
104. Okay, I'll go first. Like, whatever it was, right? Yeah. Adjusted. And it's just like, and then Keegan goes on for like another 3 minutes before he has shot. And Sam was ready. It's like, Sam, just hit the shot, right? I wish I gave a bogey. I'm actually giving a double bogey to the PGA Tour dress code again. And the reason I thought about it was from the tournament in Singapore. I know that PGA professionals can wear shorts after a certain heat index or whatever.
Correct, yes.
Which I'll give a thousand bogeys to. I don't care, whatever you want. It's just stupid. I don't think, when you're giving me a lesson on the driving range, Scott, you can be wearing biker shorts for all I care. It doesn't change the lesson.
I don't think you want to see that, but anyways,
you don't know what I want to see. But I thought about it when I was talking to a couple guys and gals that were over there, just how hot it was. The PGA Tour, if it was that hot, wear your pants, wear your shirt. And it's so dumb. It's so it's old. There's nothing new I can say. I just, let's move on from it. You wear shorts in the practice rounds, let people wear what they want. Yeah. The LPGA does. Why can't the PGA?
Well, I mean, their concern, and not that I support it or whatever, I mean, their concern obviously is always about corporate stuff, right? It's always sponsors and what the sponsors want and whatever. So, I mean, really, if that's the case, they should go back and talk to different sponsors.
Get different sponsors. I'm sure, you know, I know Barstool is not everyone's favorite tournament, but they've talked about sponsoring PGA Tour events at some point. Maybe they will one day. What would that look like? You never know. Those type of things that are like, you know, if it's about money and the sponsors, then find sponsors that don't care if somebody's diet, like actually care if somebody's dying.
Yeah, but that comes down to a value proposition of, is it more important that we have a guaranteed locked in sponsor for 5 years and we've got their 60 million, or we get let guys wear shorts? I mean, there's the thing. If you can't find that sponsor,
like, why does it have to be sponsor, that?
Unfortunately,
that's where my head's at. Yeah,
I know, but unfortunately, this is some of the way some of the things work.
I know.
It
is what it is. I'm just giving it a double bogey. I don't think anything I say at this point isn't going to be new. So
well,
it's just
I'm
going to
go
bogey. Why don't you finish on a positive here?
Okay. Well, I'm going to go opposite of you, Sam Burns. I mean, one of the things, although he doesn't bring any value to you, I've been watching Sam Burns since he was in college. So.
Sorry, let me clarify. Those two going back and forth on a Sunday.
Right, I get it. Yeah.
Because obviously I wanted 100%. Sam Burns to win.
Yeah. No, I get that. Fair enough. A birdie to him for finally getting it done, getting that first win. Talented player, won 4 times in college. Watched him play, you know, for LSU coming up. Had some rough goes as far as, you know, playing with Tiger, and had some bad rounds when he was in position and so forth, but finally kind of broke through. And the other cool part with him is that, he and his wife Caroline are involved in a lot of charity efforts that, you know, he doesn't have to be at this point. I mean, it's not like this guy is loaded with cash already, even at 24 and coming out on tour, but he is already choosing to get involved with, several foundations organizations and several efforts, you know, that are giving back and doing that early in his career. So it was nice to see him win. And obviously he was emotional about it. And, you know, again, I just like to see some of the younger guys come up, you know, put their stamp on the game, get that win. And it gives them that much more potential to, you know, either get another win or go the way of Matt Wolf. So, you know, we just don't know what's going to happen, but you know, he's an exciting young player and I think we're going to see him around for a while.
I like it. And those exciting young players and those stories are why we continue to bring our guest on that we have this week, Ryan French, who documents those week in and week out on his Twitter account, A Case of the Golf One. We had Ryan back on this week to, you know, talk about his story that's been finally released as he's joining the Fire Pit Collective with Matt Janella. And, yeah, why don't we bring in him, chat about, you know, his Twitter account as per usual, what he's seeing out there, you know, what's happening in the world of golf and what the Fire Pit Collective is. But before we do, a message from our episode sponsor, Ping Golf.
At Ping, our culture of curiosity has been driving innovations for over 60 years. Innovations like the new G425 iron, which brings you greater distance without sacrificing the forgiveness and control you need to play with precision. And with free access to the Arcos Caddy system, you'll play smarter and shoot lower scores. The new Ping G425 iron. Better by every measure. Get fit today.
Visit ca.ping.com to learn more about G425.
All right, we want to welcome back a good friend of ours. Hard to believe it's been almost 2 years since he's been on the podcast here. The man of the Mondays, Monday Q Info, A Case of the Golf One. The handle, he says, is the worst one on Twitter. Ryan French, how are you, bud?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me on. I can't believe it. I remember we talked a little bit via message the first time I was on your show and like how nervous I was at those times during podcasts. Like I never listen to my own podcast back or when I'm a guest, and I'm definitely not listening to that one because I'm sure I just stumbled all over myself.
Yeah, I haven't gone back to the early ones of our podcast yet. I think at some point I will, especially the first one. I think we had more beverages than we thought we would, and our guests definitely did. So yeah, I haven't gone back there, and it's kind of the same thought process that you have.
Yeah.
We all get there. We all get better and, you know, you keep doing your thing. And obviously that's been the same for you, right? I mean, it's a process.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm definitely more comfortable, but I'm sure 2 years ago I had no idea how to do one of these things. So not that I'm like an expert by any means, but I think I'm just a little more seasoned than I was back then.
Well, I mean, you can't make spelling mistakes for a podcast, so that's already a good start. Obviously, we have you on for big announcement this week. I could try to explain it, but why don't you give a big, you know, a rundown of what's going on with you? It's been a long time coming, a lot of hard work put into it, and finally able to announce your next big project.
Yeah, so I'm joining Matt Janella and Alan Shipnick at Fire Pit Collective. Matt kind of started a while ago and, Alan joined lately and, like a month ago maybe. And, they asked me to join and I mean, it's very surreal, guys. It's like, I've read Alan at most of my adult life. I knew Matt from Golf Channel and just like being a golf nerd all my life. And to say I'm going to work with them is just crazy. So yeah, I've worked on this for 3 years, never intended for it to be a job, but obviously lately I've tried to figure out how to keep it going. And this gives me an opportunity to do it. And I'm very, very appreciative of it.
So what is the Fire Pit Collective for anybody that, you know, it's new to them? Obviously I hadn't actually known too much about it until you, they posted your story. What is the Fire Pit Collective?
Yeah, I mean, the plan is to just grow it out with a bunch of content creators, whether that's niche, like obviously I'm in a niche thing, and just kind of have a one place. I use Barstool Sports, but I know that the negative connotations that come with Barstool, but Barstool kind of just has, you know, everybody doing their own thing that lives on Barstool Sports website. And, you know, there's everybody, there's golf, there's footballers, fantasy sports, whatever, and it all just lives on a site. So I think that's the long-term goal, is to just kind of have a place where it, you know, a lot of content creators live in one spot. Yeah, the fire pit is, like Matt always talks about, the fact that, you know, we all sit around a fire pit at some point in our life and have had conversations, and that's the idea behind the name.
Yeah, I mean, you know, knowing Matt, having been around him a bit, I know what he is like, and I know he appreciates what you do. When did those first conversations happen, though, and how surprised were you when he came forward and said, hey, you know what, let's have a chat?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always, I hope it comes off as genuine, because it really is. It's like, you know, he sent me a message on Twitter, and I mean, we had talked via Twitter, you know, just about golf in general. Leading up to this, but yeah, he sent me a message and said, hey, Alan and I, when Alan came on board, we'd love to talk to you. And yeah, that Zoom call is one of the many, but I mean, that's near the top of the list of surreal moments. Like I said, I've read Alan most of my life and watched Matt on Golf Channel. So to have them pitching me about why I should come to a company of theirs was like, I just, I couldn't believe it. And then I'll go to the moment, like, we kind of had a couple and we talked offline a little bit and all those kind of things. And then we finally had a final meeting to kind of make things final. My wife was sitting next to me, and yeah, I would love to say I hung up and like started screaming and whatever. I did. I was like, it's still pretty stunning. So like, I just hit leave meeting and I just sat there, and my wife was crying, and I was like, there was no huge reaction, because it really is mostly stunning more than anything.
Well, yeah, you highlighted that in that article that came out, and just an awesome story from start to finish. I know you're not one to talk about the story you've gone through and your family has gone through over the last couple of years, but that article really highlighted that. But I think for me, it just came full circle, and your, you know, modesty and how you're always looking out for everybody else and doing anything you can to, we've talked about on here, find somebody a hotel room. Up until recently, now your big thing is finding these high school, you know, teams that just don't have the equipment and helping them out, right up until, you know, your article goes out yesterday. Today you're tweeting about, you know, Titleist drivers showing up to a school and handing that out. And it's clear. I mean, I'll let it put it, you put it in your own words, but it's clear where that comes from, just knowing where you've been over the last couple of years.
Yeah. You know, in the article or in the podcast I talk about, I mean, just quickly about the high school stuff. I mean, I love that I've been able to connect players with hotel rooms. It happened again today. I've had people give like just flat out a lot of cash to players, and I love that. But the high school thing has definitely become one of the most rewarding parts of the account, because the coaches' conversations are just amazing. But you know, I've said it before, is like, I think I was a pretty selfish person for a long time. I met my wife and she definitely helped change me. And then, yeah, I mean, Jack had brain surgery, almost 3 years ago now. And I think if you go into a children's hospital in a pediatric ICU and can't gain some perspective in life, you're in pretty deep shit, because, it's a pretty rough place. And, you know, there's a lot of parents that will never take their kids home. And that's tough to be around. And if you can't gain perspective, I gained perspective. We were like, oh, woe is me. And Jack has this condition. He's going to have brain surgery. And he got to go home in a couple of weeks. And it was good perspective for us. It's good perspective in life. And yeah, my wife and I, as this has grown, you know, we had conscious conversations and made it that, hey, I have a platform. Social media can kind of have this negative connotation, which I understand. And let's make a conscious decision to try to make a difference. And amazingly, you know, the followers do it. I just have a platform to put the stuff out there. At the end of the day, I'm just an organizer. People are the ones who send clubs and send money and all those kind of stuff. I just facilitate it.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it there. I mean, social media tends to get toxic a little bit sometimes, and people tend not to have a lot of empathy for others. So, you know, you said, you know, it's a positive thing that you're trying to do and you're trying to focus on it that way. You know, that level of empathy, do you think you sharing that, you growing this account and doing that, you know, helps other people maybe think about others a little bit more?
I mean, I hope so. I mean, and again, I go back, Scott, to the same thing. I think I lived a pretty selfish lifestyle for a long time, and it makes me reflective. I'm not sure if I wasn't, you know, pretty cocky and selfish back then, I would be able to be reflective like I am now. So I hope people are reflective. I really believe in the positivity of social media. But you have to look through a lot of negative stuff to get there for sure. And I use social media. I mean, I tweeted about it today. I mute people who are negative.
Saw that.
And, you know, I just try to use social. There's enough real world happening that I don't need social media to bring me down. So I try my best to do it. And yeah, I mean, I get some selfish satisfaction out of doing this stuff. I mean, I love it. I'm the one who gets to talk to the coaches. I'm the one who gets to see all the text messages. I share some of them, but I don't share all of them. And I mean, it's selfish because it's very rewarding. So, I think because of the person I was, relatively selfish, and what we have gone through as a family, and I just refuse to let social media be the negative thing that a lot of people see it as.
I like it. There's been a lot of social media stuff in golf lately. A lot of stories we're going to get into, and we want to make sure we highlighted all the hard work you did getting to this place, but the work doesn't stop. There's Monday qualifiers every single week. There's one this week that was, a lot of rain going on. The big one obviously came last week with Mike Vasacki getting into his first PGA Tour event. I know you're not going to take credit for it, but do you almost feel good knowing that, like, hey, prior to you doing this, those stories really weren't told at that level, and that, you almost pushed them, and now when a guy gets through on a Monday qualifier for his first PGA Tour event, it's become such a big story that it's on the Golf Channel, and they're on the Golf Channel, and they're interviewed after every round.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't, like, I mean, I don't like to take credit, but do I think that Michael Vilsacki's story would have been told had I didn't start my account? I don't think so. I think on a much bigger scale, I'm glad they're being told, because I think golf is thought of as elitist. And I think that Michael is a perfect example. He lives at home. He's 27 years old and, is grinding his ass off to try to make it. But I say the same thing that I said in my podcast with Matt is Michael Vilsacki's stories happen at almost every Monday. There just happened to be a camera there that week. Neil Johnson is started to help me out and has become a friend of mine. He got in the Puerto Rico Open. He's like, Ryan, I just happened to be in my car. I was bawling like a girl. And, it's just like it happens all the time that Michael Vasacki may never make it to the PGA Tour. He may never make it to the Corn Ferry Tour. He'll always have that moment. And that is an overwhelming moment for a lot of players when you've worked 7, 8, 10, 12 years, whatever. And then all of a sudden your realization is that you've made it to the pinnacle of where you want to be. It happens almost every Monday. Now, everybody doesn't cry or whatever, but there's emotion at every Monday and there's a story at every Monday.
Now, he just recently was put into the, Charles Schwab event as a sponsor's invite. And you talked about, the difference of the people that are working decades to get there. And I know Mondays, those are your guys. Now I'm wondering where are your thoughts here? Does it make sense that he's getting a sponsor's invite, or would you rather that spot go to somebody that's on the Corn Ferry Tour that maybe hasn't locked up their card for next year, but been out there for a while?
Yeah, Andy and I, Andy Johnson from the Fried Egg, Andy replied to my, I tweeted today that I thought it was good, and Andy replied. Listen, here's what I would love for sponsors exemptions to be. It doesn't have to be Michael Vilsacky. It can be a Korn Ferry players. I wish sponsors exemptions would get back to rewarding people who have a chance to get there. Obviously, at the end of the day, Michael's going to bring eyeballs to the – I mean, I tweeted the word Charles Schwab Challenge today, and it's like been – that tweet was like 1,000 times or something like that. So they won. I mean, they got
their value. They got their value.
Yeah, they got their value from it. But I think it's great to see – because Michael, regardless of his story, he's a very good player and has a chance to make it to the PGA Tour. He may never. He might go to the Colonial and shoot 80-80. But he's won 40 events in Florida. He's good enough. I would love to see if it's Nick Hardy or a Korn Ferry guy or Michael Vilsacky or whatever. I'd love to see exemptions given to players who either have grinded or, and but most importantly, have a chance to do something. Like, I'm totally fine with him getting an exemption. I would be totally fine with him not getting an exemption. And Nick Hardy or you know, a million other players on the Korn Ferry Tour.
You got to pick one. I'm making you pick now, Nick Hardy or Mike for that sponsors event exception.
I mean, probably I would honestly say, I mean, I love Mike. Him and I were on the phone today. I would probably say Nick because, I mean, at the end of the day, who has the most chance to win an event? It's Nick Hardy right now at this point in their career. And he has quote unquote earned it more because he's, you know, he's paying his dues at the place he's supposed to. He's Monday, those kind of things. So I'm totally fine. I'm totally good with, Mike getting one, but yeah, I would take, if I'm the, in a perfect world, if I was the tournament director, I'd
if you're Mike Toth.
Let's do a perfect world question here. What is a perfect tour event for you? How many spots would actually come from a Monday event?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, in a perfect world, I would love to see sponsors exemptions go away because I don't think they're used very well, very often. Now, obviously, there's some sponsors. There's many categories for the people that are listening that don't know. And I'm okay with like a tour member that's in the 150s or whatever getting one. But like true unrestricted sponsors exemptions, I would love to see go away. And what I think would happen is if you took those spots and put them in Mondays, two or four, you would see the best play, Nick Hardy, right? If it was an eight spot on Monday, and he wanted to take a week off from the PGA Tour or from the Korn Ferry Tour, he would go play a Monday to see if he can, you know, make it work. I think if you had eight spots, the Mondays would be great. And you would see more of the like better players from Korn. I mean, Korn Ferry guys just don't chase Mondays because they want to, it's the only way to the tour is to get through it. So, but if they were eight spots and you could do more and you could get through, like, If Nick could knew he was getting into events, he would go play the PGA Tour because he believes he should be out there, which he obviously probably should. So if it was eight spots, he would probably go play more Mondays and get into more events. So ideally, I'd like zero unrestricted sponsors exemptions and more Mondays.
All right. Well, let's get some thoughts on the other side of the chart. Sure. LPGA, two Monday qualifying spots. How ridiculous is that?
And you have to be a member. It's
exactly.
Yeah. I mean, there is no more, as you guys know, there is no more closed door. The Champions Tour is close, but there's no more closed door membership tour than the LPGA. There's no top 10 rule if you're a non-member. Sponsors exemptions money doesn't count towards the money list. It's two spots and it's closed to non-members. So, you know, the good developmental tour player on the LPGA side can't go play, and it is as closed shop. Before the account, I caddied for a lady named Nicole Dre, who's I believe 50 years old on the Symetra Tour, and I mean she'd never won an LPGA tournament. She had like kept her card. I don't know what the rule is to become a lifetime member. It was like 5 years in a row or whatever, and I mean, she hadn't finished in the top 100 in 10 years and she was still getting LPGA tour starts. You literally can't leave the LPGA tour. You can't. I mean, like, once you have had some success, you can't get in and you can't leave. And she was in that boat. She's like, well, I get 5 starts a year, you know, like I got to come out here and play on the Symetra tour. Yeah. Yeah. There is no more closed shop in all of golf than the LPGA tour. It, you know, I mean, the Sophia Popoff thing, you know, they've changed the rule there, but it's just another example. They want to handpick as best they can the players that come in and out of there. It seems to be that they're changing a little bit. You know, they changed the rule for Sophia. Hopefully they change the top 10 rule at some point. But, yeah, it's a pretty close shop on the LPGA Tour.
Even, like, their Hall of Fame, too. Right, like, yeah. Lorraine Ocho.
Yeah, like, yeah, that makes no sense.
In the World Golf Hall of Fame, but not in the LPGA Hall of Fame, yeah, because it doesn't check a ball. Yeah. It's so silly. What, you're hurting your sport.
Exactly. Exactly.
Just on that thought, you know, and talking about qualifying and things like that, and, you know, lots of people have batted around, and I know where I kind of sat on it, and I see where players, you know, what the idea is behind it. But if we look at things like Q School. You know, the traditional Q School for the PGA Tour is obviously gone. It did provide that sort of carrot, that, you know, that great story that somebody would leap in there and get their card or whatever. But we also knew in the end that a lot of those players just wouldn't stick around on the tour, that the, you know, the Korn Ferry Tour obviously became the better way to identify those players long term. Any thoughts from your perspective on, you know, would you like to see a Q School still, or at least for a couple of spots?
Yeah, I mean, I wish they could. I mean, with the wraparound schedule, it's just so hard. But let's just take logistics out of it. If we could figure it out logistically, yeah. I mean, I wish they played for, you know, 3 cards or 5 cards or whatever that number is that would make it work. I agree that it's, you know, the Korn Ferry Tour is going to ultimately, you would hope, get the best players. There's an argument about that because of the type of the courses they play and all that. That's probably another separate discussion. But yeah, I mean, I think when, you know, Q School was Q School and you had guys, I mean, Ryan Yip, that we all both know, I mean, made a putt on the last hole that thought he was good enough to get in and it ended up being one short, but that you're talking about $1 million or whatever, $1 million plus putt. And Ryan is now the coach at Kent State. Had that been good enough and he got to the PGA Tour, what would his career look like at this point? And so, yeah, there's just not many. As you guys know, I love a story. So, like, to have $1 million putt, $1 million plus, you know, is just awesome drama. I don't think it's never been, you know, the original Q School has never been in a social media. I know Twitter was around it in 2012, but not like it is today. I mean, it would be an awesome event.
I tweeted the Q School in 2010 live, my friend.
That's awesome. But yeah, I mean, there's just so many good stories. I wish we could see it. Cause now, as you guys know, like, you win or you get your card and literally it's like, oh shit, I got to go to Bermuda most years for two weeks. And then to South America for 2 weeks, I got to figure out how the hell I'm going to get there. I mean, you're talking about $20,000. And so you've just got through the best tournament of your entire life. And the first thought is like, oh, where am I going to get
$20,000?
I mean, I was talking to Steve LeBron, you know, shot 62 or whatever the final day in 2018. And I was like, what's it feel like? And he's like, well, my credit cards are maxed. I got to figure out how I'm going to get to Bermuda. And so it's there is no joy anymore. It's more of a kind of a sense of relief, obviously, that you got your card and there's some joy, obviously. But like, then it quickly turns to like, wow, now I've got to figure out financially how the hell I'm going to make this next year work.
Yeah, I need to get some sponsors that will help me out on that. One area I don't think we're going to have anybody worrying about financially making it work is the PGL continues to just linger.
And the Super League.
It's lingering. Dustin Johnson's agent coming out saying, you know, this is real. They're talking big dollars. what are your thoughts on it overall? Like, I mean, we could go down, hey, if it is a Super League, maybe we can go down a conversation. Hey, like, do they do Mondays? And like, say you win $1 million just for getting through the Monday. Like, we can go crazy, but I just want your thoughts overall on just hearing it. And do you even think this is going to happen? Or are we still just, you know, blowing smoke here?
Yeah. I just read a tweet from a follower, and I would give him credit if I remembered who it was, but it's pretty funny because I tweeted out, is the Super League going to have Mondays or what? And his tweet was, with the way Justin and Rory are playing, I look forward to pictures of them like pushing their push cart at a Super League Monday or whatever. So, I mean, I really think, and obviously guys, I am very biased. So this is not, I just think that no cut, you know, World Golf Classics. I mean, I think we've kind of seen the like interest in them wane. And so having that week after week, I don't know how that's sustainable. That doesn't mean that, like, obviously it's going to hurt if this really does happen. It's going to obviously hurt the tour, but I just don't know how very rich guys playing over and over again for a lot of money just keeps people's interest over a year long. I get it.
Or even their interest, right? Like, yes. Like if DJ's got 30 million in the bank, right? Like,
yes.
It's where, you know, that's my question. Is it all it over there? Like, I don't see it lasting, but hey, 30 million is 30 million. I saw one guy tweet out, you know, if I was DJ and I was offered 30 million, Justin Rose was offered 30 million, I'd be pissed. I wanted to respond, be like, if I was offered 30 million, I don't care what anybody else would be offered.
Yeah, everybody said, are you going to cover it? I was like, I mean, everybody has a price, guys. I'll be over there tomorrow. You know what I mean?
Like, absolutely.
I'll sell out this Monday Q thing in a heartbeat.
We'll sell the podcast for 30 million. I will tattoo my entire back with the logo for 30 million.
Yeah, exactly. I just don't. I mean, what it's done, obviously, and Dustin's agent is using it perfectly.
Oh, absolutely.
And you've seen it with like the 40 million and now the increase in Korn Ferry purses.
Yep.
And I think you're going to see other things along the way. Is, I mean, it's a great negotiating chip, and it's put the tour in a tough position. You know, I mean, the Korn Ferry purse, I've heard rumblings about it, but obviously I'm sure they moved up the announcement, you know, after all this Super League came out, like, hey guys, you can make a living on the Korn Ferry tour while you wait to get to the PGA tour where you can make, you know, 40 million for being a good social media person. So I definitely think it's pushed the hands of the PGA tour, whether it happens or not. I really don't think it's sustainable at all. I think there's just, over a year, 30 guys or 50 guys or whatever that number is, just super boring.
Yeah, I mean, I would be more worried less about the PGA Tour. They're still going to – the PGA Tour will still be the PGA Tour, and guys will kind of go back and forth. It's the European Tour, right? Like those guys over there where it's like, hey, I can't get in. Hey, yeah, I'll come play. You know, I'll come play on your million tour. I don't even want to call it the PGL anymore. Just call it the millions tour at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, I wonder if this is going to push you know, the European Tour and PGA Tour to find a common ground to put on more events together or whatever. I don't know what it is, but.
Well, I'm thinking full circle. If maybe you don't get the PGA Tour guys there. What if the PGL goes, you know what? In Europe and in the Asia market, the ladies are where the money is at.
Yeah.
What if we go against the LPGA and then we really show them? And now, because you know the LPGA, the girls there, but absolutely, you're 1 million. I'm in. Like, like that's where I think they could. You know, I think they might. Obviously, the guys is where the money is right now. But if that doesn't work out, that's if I'm their marketing team. Let's try that out.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
That'd be interesting. I mean, like you said, though, it's a, you know, it looks like it's a little bit of a negotiating tool. How good would it be if that trickles down, not only Korn Ferry, we're seeing that now, but, you know, we start to look at PGA Tour China, Mackenzie Tour, Formel Tour, if those start to get supplemented, because right now, most of those events are really, you know, they're down to the organizers of those events to come up with the purses. But if the tour is willing and throwing some money down there, now we have something, some viability for a lot of these guys that are grinding it out. How good would that be?
Yeah. I mean, whatever the reason is, that, you know, the Corn Ferry Tour is going to have $1 million purses in a year and a half. Whatever the reason, if it's Super League or people are scared or the players committee said, hey, I was there once and we need to increase it. Whatever the reason is, it's good for the game here. Because at the end of the day, you lose players. You know, I know no one cares if Steve Wheatcroft plays in an event or not, but Steve Wheatcroft was like, I'm never going back to the Corn Ferry Tour. I have four kids and I retired. And Kyle Thompson and Edward Lohr and
Colton,
all those guys, you know, they couldn't make a living. And yeah. So I just really think that if you're in the top, you know, 700 in the entire world and something, you should be able to make a living. I don't want anyone to get rich on the Corn Ferry Tour. But I think we lose players because they literally can't make a living out there. And it's not about skill or whether they can do it. It's that they don't want to go lose money playing on the second best tour in the United States, third or whatever your argument is, where the Corn Ferry stands on a worldwide scale, third to fifth best tour in the entire world. And you can't make a living. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. And so that, you know, trickles down again. I think you're seeing so many more players get through on like a grind. You know, I use Joel Damon as my example all the time, just wasn't a great player and then was better in Canada and a little better and then won in Canada and then was an okay Corn Ferry player, then decent Corn Ferry player, then a good one, so on and so forth. Is like, you know, how many Joel Damons have we lost on the McKinsey Tour that just never had the financial resources to get to where Joel Damon is today? And the answer is a lot. One knows.
For sure.
But money ends tons of careers. That's just the way it is. And if you can break even in Canada instead of losing, you know, 25, 30 grand, then, you know, where is your career? You know, how many Joel Damons have we missed out on?
I like it. We'll wrap it up with this. I like to ask you this every single time you come on, but putting you on the spot, who are some names we need to start looking out for? Names you're seeing close to the top of those leaderboards on Mondays, names like Nick Hardy that haven't locked up their Corn Ferry Tour card, or maybe some mini tour players that, you know, you're hearing rumblings that, you know, they're going to be trying some more Mondays. Who should we be looking out for that you keep looking out for every time you go through your lists?
Yeah, I mean, first guy is a mini tour guy, Matt Picasso, that I don't know if you guys have talked to him, but you should talk to him. He's awesome. Good friends with Mark. Yeah, Matt has a great story. For those that don't know, I'll quickly recap it. Played 1 year of college golf, lost his godfather, who was very close to him, and, you know, in his own words, kind of got wrapped up, quit school and kind of got wrapped up in the wrong crowd, quit golf entirely. And at 26, started to pick up the game literally to get his life kind of in order more than anything. And now is, I think he's 37, is one of the best developmental tour players in the country and just got an exemption into the BMW. And nice. So has been close at a couple Mondays, doesn't play a ton of Mondays, kind of like financially it's pretty tough and he supports himself. So doesn't play, but yeah, got an exemption in the BMW, and, you know, most people talk about how that I've talked to is like, this guy can do it. Obviously, time is of the essence at 37. Mark, I always put in there, Mark Anguiano, that you guys are friends with, and we all know Mark is, a great dude and has won many times at big events, just needs to kind of get status and see what's happening. And Patrick Cover, who won a qualified this week, I mean, I'm just working on a tweet about him right now. Over the last 6 months, there's not many players playing better than him right now. Won two events on the G Pro Tour, which has like 100-person fields, came in second, medalist at a form tour event, and then this is his second Monday in his last like four attempts. So, yeah, those are like some three guys that kind of watching out for right now.
I like it. Well, Ryan, really appreciate you coming on as per usual. You can find you on Twitter at A Case of the Golf One. Great handle. I don't know how you came up with it. Jesus. We really appreciate you coming on. We really appreciate you telling your story and just, you know, telling the stories to everyone and just being you. That's the TLDR of it.
Yeah, I mean, guys, as I say to you guys every time I'm on, it's nothing without support like yourself. I don't know how to thank everyone, but I'm on your podcast, so I appreciate it. The three of us have messaged a bunch, bounced ideas off of you and thoughts, and you guys are always good with any Canadian info, obviously. So there's so many people that have helped me get to this point, so thank you, and I appreciate it, and happy to be on.
Well, thank you to Ryan French for joining us. Just an awesome, honest, vulnerable. You get who he is on Twitter. He's the same guy in those chats. Mike goes off, same guy. I read his article. I'm not going to lie.
I know what you're going to say, yeah. And I did the same thing.
I wasn't crying, but you know, you could feel the tickle in the back of your throat. Yeah. And it's just like, it's those people where it's like, what can I do to make you succeed? Because I want to root for you. So I'm so excited for the Fire Pit Collective. I'm looking forward to, you know, just another different way of doing journalism.
Yeah, 100%. And that was my first feeling too. I read the article, and that was my first message to him. Like, dude, you're trying to make me cry first thing in the morning. This is not good, or whatever. And the great part about him is that, you know, you're right. He's super honest, and obviously, you know, everybody heard that you know, he made a transformation in his life, and things changed in his life to make him think differently. And you know, I have a lot of respect for that, and I'm the same way. You know, anytime he messaged me and you know, asked about something, and it's the same going back, you know, there's nothing that will stop me from trying to help him, you know, kind of move forward. And he's just good people. And it's nice to see him with a group as well that is going to support him, because Matt's fabulous. We'll get Matt here on the show at some point. And, you know, Alan is great too. And you know what, you're right. They're going to do some great things as far as journalism and telling stories, which is exactly what Ryan has been doing, and what it's appealed to them, right? They get it that, you know, it's all great that the guys on the tour, you know, the Rorys and the Tigers and whatever, you know, they're always going to get attention. And I wrote about that last month. It's the stories along the way. And there's so many cool stories in this game of golf. And, you know, people have to understand that's what we're trying to do in some cases too, that, you know, sometimes we get a guest on here that maybe people don't know about. And it's not because, you know, we're bringing them on because we're going to get millions of listens right away. We're bringing them on because they got a cool story. And whether people listen to that now, or it's 2 years from now that they start to listen it, Ryan's a great example. We brought him in on June 2019. We mentioned that.
I couldn't even form a sentence when we brought him in last time.
Which
is on brand.
No, exactly. It's perfect. And he'll admit that, of course. But, you know, that's the cool part, is that, you know, recognizing that, seeing that, hey, you know what, that's going to bring some value to golf. Yep. And I think that's the important thing. And I think that's what he does. He brings value to golf and brings different angle, different perspective. And love having him on, and looking forward to having him on again.
Yeah, he tells the stories that, the life-changing stories. And I forget what the actual tournament's called this week, but we're at
Wells Fargo Championship.
Yeah, we're at Quail Hollow. And Rory's been struggling, obviously. And if he wins this week, people will write great stories. He's back, blah, 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 and all the changes. It doesn't change Rory's life in the slightest. He probably won't even think about it the week after, right? He might be on a high from a confidence level, but those are the stories that Ryan shares, that we like to share, where it actually is a life change. You know, Mark Baldwin picking up a made cut after barely getting into the tournament. It sounds crazy. That's a life change. That's diapers for his kid, right? Yeah. And it's insane to think that on the tour just below the PGA Tour, but it does happen week in, week out. Let's talk about Quail Hollow, though.
Sure.
Where do you want to start? I think I want to start with Ian Poulter. Did you see his Instagram account? He got an email from the tour because he is just under 0.7 seconds slower than you're allowed to hit your shot or whatever. So he's been warned about this.
He's on the observation list now.
Because he's 0.7 seconds. So he said, you know, he's never been warned before. And he said, I don't care who I'm playing with this week. No, if I'm ready, I'm hitting the ball. I'm sorry if it's you're about to hit, but that's what's going like that. Like you,
but that's working though. That shows it's working in a way.
Fair,
right? Right.
Fair enough. I guess you got a point. I was looking at it the other way of like, really? That's where you're gonna go?
I know.
Like that's
it. It is a fraction. Yeah.
It's probably 569. Like it's gotta be some sort of algorithm that triggers it, that triggers the email that they look into and they write it up and it puts it into probably a template and they send it off to Poulter. I thought it was silly, but yeah, you got a point. Maybe you got a point.
Yeah. Scott. Well, I know it made a difference, you know, when Eduardo Molinari published, was that last year or the year before? And he published the warnings list. Remember the European Tour that event? But that's the thing, though. And it's not a case of the public shaming, because obviously Ian published this himself on Instagram, right? So, you know, he's owning it. But he's also saying that, hey, you know what? He's going to pick up the pace. So you know what? They need something.
I like the public shaming from the player though, where he's like, you know what? Screw you.
Shamed himself.
Yeah. Screw you. Not Ian.
Oh, no, the Molinari one.
Where it's like, screw all you.
Yeah.
I'm not slow and I'm getting this email. Yeah. Here's the players that you need to be chatting about that are actually really slow. I like that way more. Now, Poulter was the difference. I thought it was funny and cool. And then he goes on today and posts his wedge. It said, drive for show, putt for cars.
Yeah, which is awesome.
I thought that was sick.
Yeah, he's got a cool wedge set up there. But, you know, that's part of it. I mean, players know who's slow. They know who's deliberate. They know who takes their time. And, you know, it's an awkward situation, but you don't see all the other players every week. It's not like you're buddies with them. And I've certainly seen situations where players have gone to other players on the McKenzie Tour or PGA Tour Canada or whatever, where they've said, hey, dude, you got to pick it up. Like you really do. And I've seen it on the PGA Tour. I remember in a situation where I was talking to one guy and the one caddy went over and talked to the other caddy and said, you know, he was caddying for an amateur or a Monday qualifier and said, hey, dude, you better pick it. Your guy better pick it up or my guy's going to go off on him. You know, just a little bit of a warning. And, you know, if they're going to get time now, they do individual timing now. They've changed up some of the regulation things. But in the end, you know, if they want to, if they want to solve things, they're going to have to do it more internally. The pressure from the outside is not really going to make that much of a difference. People can bitch all they want on Twitter and social media, but that's not going to make a difference.
What do you think Will Zalatoris's letter to the tournament director getting his sponsor's exemption this week looked like?
I think he just sent him a link to his world golf ranking.
I was thinking just the link to the Masters leaderboard.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
I saw a tweet something around that and I just had a good chuckle that we're still here. And I get it. Earn it the way everybody else earns it. Right. Yeah. But it's just funny because it's like, he's there. He's still playing every week, but he doesn't have, you know, status.
Status, yeah.
It's odd.
In Texas there, you know, he went and visited the guys that were playing the Korn Ferry Tour event because he didn't play that week because he really doesn't have any purpose of going and doing it. There's not really much point, so he's just going to get his starts. Yeah, it is odd, but, you know, it's a formality really is what it is. But, I mean, Quail Hollow should be a good golf course for him. And Quail Hollow is neat just because of the fact that it had the PGA Championship in 2017, obviously has the President's Cup next year. Players have got to know it well. The original design needed a little bit of work, and they've altered it a little bit over the years. And it's become a quality golf course. And Charlotte's a great city for golf. And I was fortunate enough to be there at the PGA in 17 when Justin Thomas won. And certainly, you know, the support is there behind it. Players certainly didn't have anything bad to say about the golf course at all.
Why would you?
Yeah.
I just thought about this. Do you think people love it based on the stories that have come out of it in the new kind of turnover post Tiger? And what I mean by that is I believe Rory's first win was here. Ricky's first win was here. Justin Thomas's first majors here. You know, the big kind of their big faces of golf nowadays, they all kind of happen at Quail Hollow where you have those memories of, I remember when they just picked up that first win and now it's, you saw them take off.
Yeah, that could be, that certainly could be part of it. But, you know, I think the other side of it as well is that the club is known for their treatment for the players. They really take care of the players very, very well. You know, there's a lot of hospitality that takes place, and that's important for the players. They feel comfortable there. They feel comfortable with their families and their spouses there. It's an easy tournament to get to for a lot of the families. You know, obviously,
big hub.
Yep. Yeah, Charlotte's a big hub. A lot of them will stay over at like Ballantine Resort, number of places. You know, there's some good spots that are not far away. A lot of players have ties to Charlotte. They played there during mini tour days, whether it was a, you know, Hooters tour or whatever the case may be. So, you know, and some players like Mackenzie Hughes, you know, Canadian, lives nearby. Lots of other players live nearby. Harold Varner, who's played well here, is just from around the corner in Gastonia. Or Gastonia Country Club, but Gaston, North Carolina. And the golf course itself is just, it's pretty, it's straight out in front of you. There's nothing real tricky. It's got a cool finish to it. Obviously, they talk about the Green Mile, but, you know, I don't look at it as a difficult finish, but it's a fun finish. You know, yeah, it's
18th hole is fun, right?
You've
seen it right to the end. You know, just a slightly tuggy drive, and now you either got a ball in that crick or you got to quite the stance.
Yeah, it was neat in that 17 PGA. I followed Justin Thomas kind of all the way in from 16. 15 is a drivable par 4, can be set up that way. You know, 16 is a reachable par 5, so some scoring opportunities. 14 is the drivable one. 15 is a par 5. 16's got a cool straightaway par 4, and then it's got a, you know, a green that's protected by water in behind. 17, you got to drive across the water on the par 3. And then, like you said, 18, you've got that creek down that left side. And I remember standing on that tee right behind Justin Thomas as he hit that final tee shot on 18 and just thinking, man, how nervous are you right now? And how far right is this going to go? And, you know, it's not overly daunting. That creek's not very big, but, you know, there is something to it. And like I said, the spectators, although there won't be a ton of them there, the whole atmosphere of being a golf town makes a difference. And so it's always a good event. And unfortunately, they didn't have it last year. Max Holm is the defending champion, and certainly he's gained a lot of momentum in the last little while, you know, with his win at LA. So I'm sure a lot of people have their eye on him as well.
I wonder if anyone can go back and find that final tee shot on 17, see if they can find you in it.
I've actually seen, I saw the TV footage and you could actually see me behind it. I have to go and find the clip.
No, let's do this. Let's do this. Yeah. We got a couple TaylorMade hats to give away.
Sure.
Our buddy Todd Frazier has yet again sent us some new tour only hats, with the new Sim 2 logo yet again. So, why don't we do this? The first person to send us a picture of Justin Thomas's tee shot with your face on it, where you can find it, and you can't Photoshop it. Scott will know, because you know he was, you know, a lot younger.
I know where I was standing.
First person to do it, they get one of the hats. Let's say that.
All right, cool.
Sounds good. I like it. So we'll make sure we highlight that. You can find that on the Twitter account and on the Instagram account. Maybe don't give them away exactly what we're looking for, but maybe highlight. Hey, you got to head out. Check out this part of the podcast. Make them listen and see what if anyone can.
I'll give you some guidance, knowing where the spectators were standing and where the photographers were standing, and the way the tee box is and high up. There probably would have only been about two photographers on the right side who may have gotten me. Your better chance is to capture it probably in video. So start searching through video and see, check the frames and see if you can find me in there.
For a hat.
It could be funny, though.
If nobody gets it by next week, we'll come up with something else. But
all right, sounds good.
Shout out to TaylorMade Canada for sending us some more gear to give away. All right, let's make our picks for this tournament, Scotty. Every week we do this. You're up 2-1. I owe you a bottle of wine. I can't bring it to you because of COVID. And apparently you can't bring me mine because you don't pay up. So why don't we go through? Why don't you pick first? I think I went last week. We each take three players. They got a win and bottle of wine on the table.
You know what? I'm not going to go far with this because, you know, I just talked about a guy who won here in 17. I'll take JT. You know, didn't have his best putting for performance recently, but good memories here, good vibes, knows how to play the golf course, can't stretch much further than that. And, you know, he still is the number two player in the world.
I like it. I'm going to go purely storylines this week. So Rory's been playing like doo-doo. I'm going to pick Rory. I want Rory. He's switched back to his Roars prototype irons.
I saw that.
Of the, I apologize, the other muscle backs that TaylorMade had for him. So maybe that's something to do with it. Maybe he's coming off, you know, the Masters. He's had quite a break here. He said, you know, you're done with the whole trying to chase Bryson thing. Let's go with Rory.
All right. I like that one. I'm going to take Webb Simpson. Webb, home course. He is a member there. Lives in Charlotte. Has played well there. Hasn't won. But I think he's a solid choice. And, you know, he's a utilitarian as far as a player is concerned. So I think his game fits with pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, I agree. I like that pick. I'm going to go Max Homa. I'm going back to back here. He's just been playing so good. Played good last week. Pretty bad back nine coming in, but was dialed in right until the end at the Valspar. So why not? Why not Max Homa to pick up back-to-back wins? I believe that would have been his second win this season. Just had a great year all around. And making another win would make him have an argument for a captain's pick here on the Ryder Cup. And I would not be surprised if that's in the back of his head right now.
Yeah. All right. My last pick, I'm going to take Abraham Anser. Guy striped it last week, was number one in fairways hit at Innisbrook, which is really an important thing as well at Wells Fargo. It's a heavily treed golf course. Great putting as well, and led him to a fifth place last week. So I think he's got some momentum. You know, we can't talk enough about this guy's short game. So I think he's a solid choice.
I love it. I'm going with Ian Poulter. I think
with his kid on the bag.
He's fired up. He's got the kid on the bag. That's going to be terrifying. First tournament. He's mad. Yeah. I don't think he's going to win, but what a storyline that
would be. That'll be a fun pick. Yeah.
So, I'm going to Ian Poulter. So there's our picks for this week. I got Rory, Max Homa, Ian Poulter. Scotty's going with JT Webb and Abe Anser. Let's hit the mailbag, Scotty, but before we do, a quick message from our sponsor, Ping Golf.
At Ping, we're an engineering company. Success is measured in the lab and on your scorecard. We focus on results, your results. In the G425 Max driver, that means more time in the fairway, less time in the rough. It means longer drives, shorter approach shots, and fewer putts. The new G425 drivers, taking MOI to the max. Get fit today.
Visit ca.ping.com to learn more about G425.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Thanks again to Ping for sponsoring the episode. Let's get to the mailbag here. Got some good questions this week, some open-ended ones, so this will be interesting where we end up going with them. Let's number one, this one's from our buddy Owen Riggs, who I don't know if you remember, met Owen at the Flagstick Open, but is a board member of the Northern Golf Association. Great guy from Northern Ontario. He said, what are you boys doing with yourselves during the lockdown?
I don't know.
daddy duty, yeah, obviously, for you.
I think it's been cool just being able to not have to, you know, worry about going golfing, I guess, which makes sense silly. Just like being able to hang out at home. It is boring. Yeah. It's Groundhog Day. for a while, I was doing the super speed stuff outside, you know, trying to get my swing speed up, bought those sticks.
Yep.
Shout out to Ryan for, letting me know about those. And that was, but then it's just been raining every single day. So it's almost like I haven't even missed golf, because where we live, it's like I wouldn't have played. I think I did some quick calculation, because that's what I've been doing, is I think I've missed maybe three rounds myself of I would actually have played this day or have been able to go out. So even today, another crap day here in Kingston, Ontario. So, doing a little bit of that. Outside of that, I bought a bike. I've been riding a bike. I just bought a bike one day, riding the bike around the neighborhood. And
you just bought it one day? Were you just sitting there and jumped on Amazon?
Literally went on, shout out to JJ Cycle, free ads. In Kingston. I just was on their website and they had this bike in stock, and I was looking kind of for a while. I was like, I'll buy it. Picked it up the same day, went for a couple rides. And so I just kind of riding a bike, playing some video games, watching shows.
How did that exactly play out at home? Did you tell Olivia about that?
Yeah, I said I'm going to buy a bike, and she just, I don't care. Like at that point, it's like, whatever, get out of that. She probably, like, I play a lot of golf. She's probably just sick of me being around at this point.
Yeah, no doubt.
So, yeah. Nothing of value, really.
Yeah, you know what? Obviously, I've been able to hit a few more balls than I normally would inside, but, you know, we won't get into that. I've actually, you know, beyond talking about the lockdown, which is obviously consumed.
Yeah, we made it this far without
too much
talking about it.
Yeah, but, you know, again, but talking about to friends and, you know, last night I ended up talking to golf pros and some friends in Alberta till past 1 o'clock, talking about their restrictions and stuff like that. I've just caught some more movies. I really, you know, I'm not a guy who watches a ton of movies, but working through the Marvel series with my wife and my daughter, picked up a few extra series that we've been watching on Netflix.
What are you watching? We just started Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, wow. No, I did cut through that one a little while ago. We're actually on Ozark right now. Watched
first couple seasons are really good.
And then it sort of weans out a little bit.
I just kind of fizzled out at that point, but I keep going. First couple seasons are very good.
Yeah. I saw Sons. We watched a couple of different detective series from over in the UK. Safe, one out of Iceland. Another one we started to watch that was out of Finland. Just some different stuff. A lot of the English detective series. Some of them ran one or two, you know, seasons and stuff like that. But yeah, just basically that's what I've added to my repertoire in place of being able to go out and do lessons you know, play some golf.
Yeah, you should check out Nobody with Bob Odenkirk. It just came out.
You
can get on demand. Right now it's got like the action plus funny plus, you know, it's a good storyline. You can tell they kind of set it up to be a little bit of a series. I think I enjoy it. Check out Nobody. I liked it a lot. Easy one.
I didn't get through Better Call Saul, so we'll see if I get through that.
Yeah, different than Better Call Saul.
All right, that's all I need to know. All right, on to our next one here. Now that Weirzy has his first win, how many does he get this season?
Do I lose my citizenship if I say zero?
No, not at all. I mean, you're allowed your opinion. You don't have to fly the flag.
My bet is zero. Might sound bad. It was a 2-day event. Need to see him do it all 3 days, I think. It's, at the end of the day, everyone played the same thing. So, you know, his distance, there's young guys that are just turned 50 that will be playing in more and make it more difficult. And yeah, I'm going to go with zero. I think he got one for now. I think he's playing good golf, but I don't see him ranging off, you know, a Bernhard Langer run here by any means.
Yeah. He's obviously been in contention, had a couple of second place finishes. I'd put 50-50 that he gets one more, and that's about it. I'm in the same sort of vein.
Over/under 0.5.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm sort of the same. I look at it as far as the majors, how many good players there are out there. He will contend. I'll definitely say that he'll be in the mix. But if I had to put my life on it, then, you know, no, I don't think so.
I'll throw it back to who wins next, John Daly or Mike Weir?
Ooh.
It doesn't need to be this season, obviously. Just
I'd say Weir on that one. I'd say Daly has too many injuries. I think Mike has worked really hard to get really healthy and fit. And I kind of laughed because, you know, we saw the trophy photos from 2007 and the trophy photos from, you know, 2021, and people were joking. They're like, what happened? Nothing happened to him. He looks like the same guy. Yeah. So, you know, so I would say he's going to get more starts. He's going to play more than John would. John's just more volatile. I mean, you know, he's subject to make a dozen on a par four to coming in, whereas Mike is a lot steadier. So I would say Mike gets the next win out of those two. All right. What's your oddest golf purchase that afterward left you wondering why you bought it?
Man, I don't know. Why don't you go first on that one?
I had an advantage because I saw this question come in. And I had to really, really think about it because I'm not the guy who usually buys junk more than anything as far as, you know, knickknacks and crap or whatever. I mean, I'll save up and get whatever I'm, you know, trying to get. But I will say, that said, the day after I saw this question came in, I was down in my basement. I've got at least a few boxes of, like, you know, odds and ends of clubs and, you know, maybe I bought over the years because I bought a set of blades at a Play It Again Sports or something like that. And I found a Mizuno MSX 2-iron that I was like, dude, with a steel shaft.
What am I going to do with that?
I don't know. I mean, I think
it should be under your bed for a weapon.
Yeah. I think I'm going to be pushing up tomatoes with it in a little while. It's going in the back garden, but I'd say it's got to be stuff like that. Things that I forget that I even bought, because I couldn't even tell you. I'd probably have to go back, first of all, and determine what year that club came out. And second of all, try to find out and remember, when did I buy that and why?
I think we need to do some content at some point. And we're trying to build up the Instagram a little bit. So you'll be seeing more stuff on our Tea Talk Instagram going forward. But a day where once lockdown's over, I come over and we just film you going through all the stuff in the basement. And then
we got to go play it.
And then to sum it up, though, we bring your wife down and be like, all right, what are your thoughts about this stuff? And like, if she could just throw it all in, would she? I think that's some good content. In terms of my oddest golf purchase, though, I think it's just odd. Every other year I do the same thing. It's the same circle of, I mentioned on here, one year I have like a 3-iron and the next year I have a hybrid. And each time I always sell the 3-iron and I sell the hybrid and I go back. It's every year. It's this rotation. So this year I bought a hybrid early, even though I haven't really played, and I'm just going to have both, and I'm just going to switch whenever I feel like it, and I'm not going to sell either. And those are the two for now until someone else brings me something. But I do it all the time. I mean, there's 100 different putters that I've been like, why did I have that? And things along those lines. And, you know, I think the oddest one, I didn't buy it, but my dad bought that Scotty Cameron original Futura.
Oh yeah,
so ugly.
Looks like a branding iron.
Yeah, I used it for a bit. It's so ugly, but things along those lines. I don't have that much of that stuff. I have a buddy that had the glove hand thing that like
you put the stretcher.
And he still claims it's great. So that's
you know honest. You know, and that sort of, you know, that brings me brings to mind something I was talking about. Maybe we'll consider trying to maybe get them on here. You'll have to go and watch that channel Stacked. It's Stacked Golf, and it's this couple that live down in Jacksonville, Daytona area, and they have a YouTube channel where they basically just go around buying used crap as far as golf clubs at yard sales, flea markets, thrift stores and stuff like that. Then they go out and play it afterwards or whatever. And I've got to imagine their collection is insane. They've got about 50,000 subscribers already on YouTube. Just a couple that are originally from Indiana, but it's morbidly fascinating to go and look and go, oh, I had that club and I had that club and I had, and you go, oh God, that's not good that I had all those clubs at some point.
I had a buddy pick up like a mint condition Scotty Cameron at a garage sale that the person just clearly didn't know. I think it actually, you know, it sounds bad now, but like, I'm pretty sure the husband had passed and it was just like, she was just doing,
she just got rid of it.
Yeah. I think he got it for like $50.
And yeah. Like, well, that's, and he was, that's like, what I would see.
Got it for $20.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'd see them on some of their videos. They just end up at these places where, you know, it's some retirement village in Florida where somebody's just throwing out the crap because it's the spouse that's left and, you know, Charlie's old clubs are lying around and all of a sudden she's selling off his drivers for $5. Right. So it's pretty funny. We don't see that as much as far as those prices being so low in Canada, but being that they're in Florida where it's, you know, just this huge golf capital, there's a surplus of clubs everywhere and all the different stores. But yeah, like I said, it's just kind of frightening when you look back and see all the different clubs and go, man, I did own that at some point. So anyways, you just try to blank it out and pretend it didn't happen, but it actually did. So, all right, on to the next one here. We got two left. Have not heard you guys discuss the Player Impact Program. Thoughts on it?
And that's, so just to clarify, that's a program where they're giving $40 million to people doing the social media stuff and on the PGA
Tour. Yeah, it hasn't officially been announced. I mean, just it's sort of the rumor that it's out there, but of course the story is just out there. But yeah, it's basically the top 10 players based on certain metrics that they will share in this pool of $40 million.
Yeah, I think it's dumb. I think they could have done it better. I think they could have upped opposite field events, you know, throw an extra million at those. You could have upped the Korn Ferry Tour.
Well, we are seeing that. That is happening. Are,
but Mackenzie Tour or whatever it's called now, the Forte Tour.
No, we saw Mackenzie and then Forme is the one in the U.S. So Forme,
whatever. I think that's money better spent. It's going to be every single year you're going to – give it to the same players. And I also think they can dictate who it goes to. They have the biggest storylines that they want to sell. They're going to be able to pick and choose. So, you know, Ricky Fowler, who's been playing like an absolute dog for the last, you know, year and a half, is going to come home with $1.5 million for just being Ricky Fowler, and they can pick that, or, you know, picking who's in the, you know, featured groups, which Ricky Fowler does every week, like Stuart
Sink. And he's not this week, surprisingly.
Because Stu Sink somehow got into one, which, shout out to bald guys all around the world. We're cheering for Stu, but it's just silly. I think we could have did it better. As Ryan said, I'm not looking for guys to get rich on the Korn Ferry Tour, but let's make them make a living, right? Like, if you throw $10 million a year back into the Korn Ferry Tour instead of this, that alone changes a lot. So I don't love it. I think you could have done it elsewhere. But at the end of the day, the PGA Tour is about entertainment. If these people are selling the most entertainment and they're like, hey, let's bring back value to them, then whatever. But those guys, it doesn't change their lives making an extra $1 million.
Well, I think those players that are doing that stuff are doing it anyways. And 100%, you're right. The tour controls a lot of that by who they promote and who they put in feature groups or whatever. So, you know, that's not dictated by the players. And really, is it going to come down to who has the best PR firm? I mean, that's really what it comes down to. If you're an up-and-coming player and you just want to kind of blow up, I mean, what kind of stories are you going to come up with just to get a lot of attention? But again, you're right. It's going to be the same players over and over again. There might be, you know, one outlier out of the 10, but otherwise it's going to be
probably Max Homa might pick up a $500K check.
Right. But realistically, it's going to be, you know, probably 10 of the top 20 players in the world. It's going to be the players that are all of a sudden being talked about all the time. And then the other side of it is if you're dealing it based on just metrics alone, I mean, when things happen and go sideways, you know, a Patrick Reed cheating situation or whatever, you know, those social media numbers are through the roof. So you're going to reward them for that.
Yeah.
So and also, sometimes it's not positive what you're getting as far as the attention.
We talked about it in the last episode. PGA Tour's website's a dump. I don't believe in them to be able to navigate if somebody's, you know, flubbing numbers here and there, making it work, or, you know, hiring an outside source. You hire an outside source for $1 million to really ramp up your numbers on social media and Google searches for $5 million or whatever. Sure. Like that stuff can happen. I do not see it lasting long. I'll say that.
No, and I know it's a preempted strike to the Super League and you know, the potential of the Saudi money coming over and things like that. They're trying to do things to protect their tour. But when it comes down to it, you're right. You know, digital manipulation happens. You just have to look at, you know, Kardashians and look at they're a billionaire or they're not. And you know, the numbers get manipulated all the time. And we see that every single day in social media. So how true is it going to be? Yeah, you're just taking $40 million and you're burning it. So you may as well take it and put it into something, you know, that's a lot more productive for the tour, whether, like you said, Korn Ferry Tour, Mackenzie Tour, Formula Tour, PGA Tour China, PGA Tour Latino Tour. Hey, they're partners and they do stuff with the LPGA, the LET, the European Tour. There's lots of different ways that you can spend $40 million a lot better than this. All right, last one. If you had one golf course to play on an indoor simulator for all time, which would it be and why?
This is a tough one because when you're playing simulator golf, the rough is kind of non-existent. I know with TrackMan, like they do take like a percentage off of it, but you really, that's something you feel a lot. You look at it and you kind of feel it out. So you don't want something where you miss a fairway and there's a lot of rough and that. You also, for me, like I played a lot of Pebble Beach on simulator and it's like, it almost ruins that if I ever went to Pebble. Right, it's like, you know, oh, the ocean's really cool from here, but like it's a simulator. Same with like Augusta. I know I'll never play Augusta, but you know, it's kind of the same thing. And then putting on top of that, that's a whole other thing. Like you go to the old course, you go to Augusta, right? The greens make a lot of that golf course. You don't really putt a lot when you're playing simulator golf. You usually just do the auto putts or whatever.
Yeah.
So I mean,
or a flat 12 footer.
I don't really have a great answer, so I'll just go, I don't know, TPC Sawgrass, I guess. I mid. I think it's a fun golf course, some shots to get to play. So that, and I know 17 is going to be pretty boring, but there's at least there's 17 other golf holes where it's not like the elements really play the biggest part. So I guess if I had to pick them, whatever, I'm going Sawgrass.
Yeah, there's some good points there. I mean, you know, when you start to think about places like the Old Course, and you mentioned that, I mean, you know, getting in fescue on a simulator is not really the same as getting in fescue or gorse in real life. So it doesn't really replicate that situation. The feel, you know, being in that environment, you know, and you know that from being in St. Andrews and what it's like being around there. It's more than just the golf course itself. It's everything else. You know what? I'd say it's going to have to be something that's a little bit more exclusive, something you don't get to see a lot. Obviously, Augusta, we do get to see it a lot every year on TV, sometimes twice a year.
Pine Valley?
Yeah, I'm going to go Pine Valley. That's exactly it. We're going to take that golf course that finally, after all these years, is going to admit a female member, at least. And I think it's a cool spot, exclusive. You know, it's either going to be something like that or a Fisher's Island or, you know, some golf course that, you know, we just don't see. You don't see it on TV. You don't see it for events. You know, you have to go back and basically, you know, look at films of Shell's Wonderful World of Golf from the 1960s to see much of Pine Valley. You just don't see it on TV and things all the time, even though we're aware of it and seen photos and things like that.
Is it on track, Ben?
No. They don't have an arrangement or deal with them or whatever. So I'd love to see it on track, man. That would be fun. Yeah, I think it'd be something like that.
Nice. Yeah, I like that. What about what's Tiger's course right now?
What's Blue the Jack. Pins Valley one?
Blue oh, Jack. Blue Jack is that, National. Is that on there yet?
No, it's not on there yet. You're certainly seeing more and more added all the time. Like, obviously, I can go and play Innisbrook and play Quail Hollow.
Did you play those?
I have, yeah.
Did you play it? Like, so this week, are you going to play, like tonight, we wrap up, you're going to go play Quail Hollow?
I played it on the weekend, but I just did an irons only round where I was just playing a little bit more forward tees just because I wanted to look at some of the driving areas and the greens and stuff like that. But yeah, it plays very realistically, like just going around it and seeing it, it feels like you're there. Really, it does. So, but again, you know, the putting, I don't really, you know, I do some of the auto putts and stuff like that. I'm more about the ball striking and things, but it would be neat to see. I think there's 100 and Trackman, I think, is 110 courses now. So I can't keep up. I don't have that much time to keep up as far as all the courses if they keep adding them, but it would be neat. They do have a tour section where they have like, they basically have different sections for the courses, par threes, you know, tour courses, links courses, whatever. And I think they have about 30 or so that have hosted tour events. So yeah, it's fun.
There we go.
So that's it for the mailbag this week. Keep those questions coming. Keep them as interesting as possible. Like anything, we'll take it. But we appreciate everybody sending those in. Keep them coming.
Well, we mentioned we're going to do some changes to the Instagram. One of the changes that you will see coming up, and hopefully as early as next week, is we'll be doing a little bit more of the video content from us actually recording it, which means we'll have to get our makeup all done up and looking good each time. But I think the coolest feature that you and I have talked about is each week, the audio you will hear on the podcast for the tip of the week, you will also be able to see the video that Scott does inside his golf cave at in his garage. And he's going to give his tip of the week over video as well. So if you're more of a visual learner, you can check this out. So this will be the last time you hear Scotty give a live tip of the week on this podcast, which is exciting and sad, but let's do it one last time, Scotty, the tip of the week before we wrap things up.
All right, let's get to it. I just want to talk a little bit about the hands. I hear a lot of people all the time, the notion that the hands just kind of go along for the ride during the golf swing. And, you know, it couldn't be any further from the truth. There are basically two things that apply forces to a golf club is basically whatever's happening on your feet and the ground and whatever's happening in your hands. And, you know, obviously because of how your hands are, you can obviously affect the golf club, not only as far as the angle of the face, the direction that it's moving in, but you're going to force, you can also see, influence how much force is applied to the golf club and what's going to happen with the golf ball. So I would say for a lot of people is that, you know, the position of your wrists are important. All those forces, like I said, you have to learn how to use your hands properly for you
And that's the real key feature here, is that a lot of times we see, you know, homogenized tips that say, you know, do this and do this. Well, you know what? You'll find out that, you know, realistically, based on how your body motion is, you're going to have to match up what your hands do to what your body does, what your club face does, in order to get to what you want it to do. So there's no set answer for that. But the real key thing here is that the hands just don't go for a ride. They basically have an active role in what happens during the golf swing and the results that you're going to get out of the golf ball based on what you do with the club and the club face. So talk to your pro, talk about how your hands work in the golf swing, get to learn how it works better for you, and you'll be on a pathway to more success.
I like it. That's it for this week. I guess before we do, what are your thoughts on lockdown stuff, Scotty? Same old, eh?
Yeah, I mean, there's not much progress. I mean, there's more meetings. You know, there's a cabinet meeting today. I haven't heard the results of that. We'll hear some things in the next day or so. But I would say in Ontario, where we are, we're probably going to run the course, at least as far as the stay-at-home order, probably to the 20th. You know, not expecting any news. And it's not just golf. It's outdoor activities and stuff as well. It's a hard thing for everybody, but you know, we also have to understand too that, you know, there's a lot of other people that are suffering during this, and you know, it's a little sacrifice to give, and basically the weather's been crap anyway, so we haven't missed out on a lot.
Been our savior right now is that crap weather.
And,
that's
for sure. And you know this, and here's the thing: we didn't get golfing in Ontario until May 16th last year.
It's true, my wife brought that up literally this week.
And it was a record season. I mean, you know, and I talked to a couple owners this weekend, and you know, I ran into one, and he said, you know what, we know we're going to be busy sun up to sundown, so. You know, we get it. Our golfers want to be back on the golf course. And this is not what you're hearing on social media, because these people are just kind of being quiet because they know they're going to get run over on social media. But they're basically content to say, you know what, we'll wait it out. We'll do our thing. And then when we get to it, we're doing other projects. You know, they're repaving parking lots and they're rebuilding bunkers. They're doing stuff that they want to do during the season that they couldn't before, and now they can. And they know they're going to be busy as soon as things happen. And we're seeing that all over the place where, you know, lockdowns are ending, golf is restarting again. You know, New York State, Ireland, all over the place, they are busy nonstop. So we'll be all good in the end. Don't worry.
I love it. All right, let's leave it there. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thank you to our episode sponsor, Ping. Make sure you check out the all-new G425 lineup at ca.ping.com. Thank you, Ryan French, for coming on. Scotty, thank you, as per usual. Great, as per usual. It's like you've been doing this for 100 years. Even though it's only been 50.
Or 113 episodes.
Or 113 episodes. And as per usual, thank you to our audio engineer, producer, Brendan Kennedy, who keeps us sounding good and getting us out on time. That's what we appreciate. But most importantly, thank you all our listeners. We can't wait to chat with you next week.